risk objective is suggest a recommendation and support it. And support it with what? With data and analysis. If you look at the CFO's office, what's his requirement? His requirement is he has a budget and his performance is measured on what is the level of variation against that budget. So whatever you do here, he wants to understand what's the impact on his budget. You're the chairman. What is the chairman's interest? Chairman's interest is he wants to see recommendation, wants to see analysis. But the recommendations he wants to see, he wants to see those recommendations as we recommend that you should do A, B, C, or D. Here are the pros, here are the cons. Now it's up to you to decide as the chairman of the board to decide which we want to vote. And to some extent, this is what the board members also want. What about bankers and consultants? Bankers and consultants in most cases will actually feed you the data and the model and the analysis. But you can't rely on this. You can't rely on this for a very simple reason that there is, in most cases, when you do a deal like this or a transaction like this, bankers will ask you to sign something called a suitability document. And the suitability document says that you've done your own analysis, your own independent assessment to judge the need, gauge the nature of this transaction, its fit with your requirements and your profile. So that, you know, if something goes wrong 6 months to a year or 2 years later, then they can say, these guys did their own thinking, they're independent, intelligent people, they did not rely on our models to make the decision that led them to the current situation and scenario. So if this is the audience and these are their objectives, the model that you produce needs to support that. Right? So the model has to be designed with the expectation it must produce some output. The output is linked to the recommendation that is being made. The recommendation has multiple issues that need to be addressed. So if you look at the Air Canada case, what are some of the issues? What are some of the requirements? First issue is, what's the oil price outlook? Second issue is, what's the impact changes in oil price on travel demand? The third piece is, what's the impact, if we don't hedge anything, on our P&L? The fourth element is, if we do decide, so no hedge P&L, what does this look like? And hedge P&L, what does this look like? Fifth element is, what's the likely cost or benefit? And then, in addition to the work that we do here, we need to support this with analysis and insights, such as, what's the probability that the hedge will be used? What's the probability that your margins will turn negative? Sometimes you will use these pieces, these elements, or these calculations to support your recommendations here. At times, this would be standalone work that you would call upon if it is required by either the chairman, the board members, the CFO, or the risk department and team. So now that we have a design in front of us, or rather we have an output in front of us, we need to think in terms of how would this model be put together. So if you were to go out and build a complete model, a model needs to be laid out in such a fashion. This is the presentation layer. This presentation layer effectively produces the output that we want to support our recommendation. In terms of a client-facing document, this is the client-facing piece. This is the piece that people who have not built the model but need to work with this model will see. So this is, you know, the cleaned up stuff. Behind the presentation layer is the actual working. This is, for lack of a better word, this is your numbers factory. So in reality, the real model, the heart of the model, the essence of the model is in the numbers factory. Behind the numbers factory are your assumptions. And then somewhere around these assumptions is your what we call raw data. So typically when you look at a model, you'll see that there's a tab for raw data, which is where you dump all the stuff. So what is the raw data that we need? We need jet fuel prices, oil prices, fuel oil prices, and WTI prices, right? So we dump that in a raw data format. What do we need in assumptions? We need data here in assumptions about the underlying business model. So for the number of passenger miles flown, what's the fuel cost? Depending on the state of the economy, what is the load factor or what's the utilization? What's the revenue generation based on that number of miles flown and the load factor combination? What is the cost structure, both in terms of fuel as well as HR, as well as interest and finance? And then what's the net margin number? So these are the assumptions that drive this model, which is then used to test this. Now, within these assumptions, there are some pieces which are constant, and these pieces come from what we call our business model. There are some that are primarily input. a number that we plug in. So what is the current value of oil prices? It's $90 or $79. That's an input, right? And then yet there are others that are simulated. So we want to be very clear about the fact that the business model stuff comes from the structure of the airline. The input comes from possibly external outside factors. The simulation stuff is the stuff that we actually go out and simulate. So what we'll do now, between now and 3:30, before you guys get off from this class, is get this done. And what we'll do is we'll build it step by step, piece by piece for Air Canada. Once we've done it, you will then repeat this for GM. The philosophy, the structure, the positioning that you see here is the same. That does not change. The only question, the only item, the piece that will change is this. So oil will get replaced by FX. Business model will switch from airline to automobile manufacturing. The assumptions will change. The underlying calculation that you do will change. The item that you're simulating will change. But the design of the model will remain. In addition to this, there is a more detailed discussion of the Southwest airline approach. So this case was just uploaded. It's not required for you to read it. But if you had unanswered questions about how this actually worked, or you thought in terms of how would a solution look like, there is more material here that answers the questions, the information that we needed yesterday. Okay? And if there's a need for us to refine a model later on, then we'll go back and look at this case and see what information is available. Let's start up with your Excel spreadsheets. You can turn your laptops on. Let's start off first with very basics of what we've discussed over here. What do you want the model to produce? You want it to go out, produce, and forecast oil prices. So we want the model to produce oil prices, which means we need to simulate. What time frame? Is 1 year enough? What's your hedging horizon? Do you hedge on a monthly basis, quarterly basis, yearly basis? So we want to simulate oil prices for 12 months. That's one of the requirements. What else? Do we just need oil prices, or we need other stuff? Just WTI is not enough. We either need fuel oil or jet fuel. Now, luckily for us, historically speaking, when it comes to hedging fuel oil, jet fuel exposure, a lot of airlines use fuel oil as a proxy or as an approximation. So we can simulate, for the purpose of our modeling, we can simulate this. The reality is a little different. Over the last 12 months or so, the two indexes have sort of gone in different direction. One has gone up by about 18%, the other has gone up by about 44%. So if you're using fuel oil on a going forward basis, you'll have an issue. But for the purpose of this case, we'll be happy with just using fuel oil. So for the purpose of our analysis, we will use WTI now, simulate WTI. But the same process that we use for simulating WTI can also work for simulating fuel oil or jet fuel. So for the purpose of our exercise, what we need to do is we need to first figure out how to simulate oil, one. Then we need to figure out how the price of oil links to ticket prices and ticket demand, two. Third, we need to figure out what's the total revenue that comes out of that ticket demand and what's the cost structure, three, and then four, simulate profit margin, right? These are the four things. So we'll not build a complete, full-fledged financial model for Air Canada. We'd build a very simplistic financial model. The objective of that financial model is that we want to introduce two things. One, concept of using simulation to generate a financial security or a financial price. To allow maybe three or four different processes to interact at the same time and see the impact of that interaction and the consequences of that interaction for our analysis and our recommendation. That's the basic idea. From a simulation point of view, the equation that we will use to simulate oil prices is a little scary, but I want you to keep an open mind. I don't want you to write it off completely. Before I show you the equation, let me talk to you a bit about how do simulation or modeling processes work, right? So when you did your refinery process, what did you do? You picked a distribution, okay? Which distribution was that? So you picked a normal distribution, right? How do you define a normal distribution? But if you were to simulate it, what's the input that you need to use to simulate, to run it? Mean and standard deviation, right? So you need two pieces. You need mean, you need standard deviation. If you think in terms of a financial security, how does a financial security work? A financial security says that I have something that earns or generates a return. And the value of the security will grow over a period of time as I go ahead and generate that return. And the simplest financial security, the easiest financial security that you would work with is a bond. Now, a bond gives you 10% return. At the end of 1 year, the bond will have 10% interest. If you start off with 100, at the end of 1 year, you'll have 110. Okay, if you start with 100, the middle of the year you'll have 105. If the rate is 20%, at the end of the year you'll have 120. In the middle of the year you'll have 110, right? So two pieces. So a bond is interesting in the sense that it only has one primary element or driver, which is expected return. In an ideal world, there is no uncertainty. As long as you hold the bond to maturity, you will make money. So from a simulation point of view, if I were to simulate a bond, I would have a grid, right? And the grid would do what? It would give me these rates, right? So what does this represent? This is, what is this? What is this axis? So this is yield, and this is, now, at the same time, if I have a bond where I switch this yield, all I want to do is, how is the value of the bond changing over time? Right? That's all I'm looking at. How would that move? Start at time zero at some level of principal, and then over a period of time, you'd sort of grow, right? So in this specific case, vol is what? Zero? Answer, because you are guaranteed a given interest rate, so your volatility, your standard deviation is zero. What about return? What if return is zero? What if you have a bond that pays you zero interest? So what would the curve look like? It looked like flat, right? If you start off with a bond that's worth 9, it pays you zero interest, it would look like a flat line. Now, if you go from a flat line to a situation where rather than zero, you get a return of 1 for every unit of time, what would this look like? Upward sloping. So now if you add, you keep volatility at zero, but you take R to a level where you see an exponential curve. What does this imply? So if I continuously compound a bond, the value, the formula is what? The value is bond price is the principal amount into E R T, right? So this would effectively give me principal amount into 1 plus RT approximately, correct? Same concept. So over here I'm saying if I continuously compound a bond, the underlying process that I'm simulating, even though there is no uncertainty in that process, is this process. And if you look at this piece of the equation, what does this piece show you? This piece says there is some principal S that is growing at a process which is exponential in nature, and this process uses not R but R minus half sigma square and into T. Other than that, it's the same. So if I were to go out and say that I'm modeling a process that has no uncertainty and the process is continuously compounded, I have an asset that gives you a guaranteed return, a certain return over a period of time. This model, the model that I'm using to simulate oil prices, will give me a process that will be B equals P E R minus half sigma square T. What is sigma square? Sigma square in this case is standard deviation or volatility or zero. So now if I want to add uncertainty, what do I do? Now I'm saying I have a return of 1 and I've added uncertainty. And I've added uncertainty by doing what? By simply taking volatility from zero to its next level. If I do this, what happened? I have the same upward sloping curve, but rather than this curve, I actually have a curve that goes up, comes down, goes up, comes down. And this happens why? Because I've switched this number from zero to some figure, some positive number. And this piece, the impact of this piece is only in this part of the formula. So effectively, the formula has two pieces. The formula has a piece which is certain, which is ERT, and a piece which is uncertain, which is sigma under root delta T and dt. So what we now do is, we will use this model to go out and simulate oil prices. And what we will do is, because we're looking at a 12-month interval, what we'll do is we'll try and simulate prices on a month-by-month basis. But we would not limit ourselves to just a one-year horizon. We would extend it to, let's say, 18 months. And then we'll try and see where it takes us. This model that we're using is primarily used for simulating the price of equities, commodities, and currencies with adjustments. So what do we need here? We need spot price of oil, which is the current price of oil. We need risk-free rate. We need time. We need number of steps, or N. Let's just call it steps. We need volatility. So if I were to build this model as of today's prices and today's data, the price of oil this morning or yesterday evening was about $79 per barrel. And when I say oil here, spot price of WTI. The risk-free interest rate in dollar terms is about 25 basis points or 0.25%. The time in the specific case is 18 months, which is 1.5 years. Because I want to do this on a monthly basis, I'm going to use 12 steps. The standard deviation of oil, this is now daily volatility. What's the volatility that you saw yesterday? 2%, 2%, 3%? So let's assume 2.5%. This is daily volatility. The model that I want to build, in that model, I want the ability to have monthly forecast the price of oil. So this is month 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, and 9. But the time frame that I'm looking at for my calculation, for my assumption, is 18 months. So for me to break this down, this 1.5 year period, I need to have 18 steps. So 12 steps is wrong. It should be 18 steps. The size of a step is 1.5 years divided by the 18 steps. 260, right? What would be the annualized volatility? The annualized volatility would be your daily volatility, which is this number, into square root of. The first thing that we do is I want 18 steps. Now for the 18 steps, I need 18 random numbers. So for random numbers, we use the Excel function of rand, bracket open, bracket close, which gives us a random number. We drag it down. Now if I press F9, these numbers will change. Now the problem is that these random numbers that we've generated are what we call uniformly distributed. They're not normally distributed. And ZT, the variable that we're using for simulation, is normally distributed. So we need to convert these numbers, these uniformly distributed random numbers, into normally distributed random numbers. How do we do that? We simply use our old friend norm S, I, and V, and we use the random number that has been generated to convert the uniform numbers into. Now there are two pieces. The first piece is the ER minus half sigma square T. So let's calculate that. This is the certain piece, right? The certain piece is EXP R, what's R? Minus half into sigma. What's sigma? Squared, yes, into delta T or small t, right? What's small t? So the certain piece is ER minus half sigma square into small t. And that's exactly what we've done. So what we now want to do is, this is not going to change in any of the month. R value will remain constant across 15 months. Value of t, small t, will remain constant across 15 months. The value of standard deviation sigma will remain constant across 15 months. For 18 months. So now what about the uncertain piece? What's the uncertain piece like? The uncertain piece is sigma into square root of small t, which is delta t, which is 0.083, into your normal random variable, right? So we multiply it by this number here, and we get this number. Now this number is going to be different from yours, but we'll fix that in a while. In order to make it easier for everybody to follow, what I'm going to do is I'm going to replace these random numbers over here with simply 0.1, so that we all have the same value, and we can debug and make sure that our structure is sound. So now what happens is we have the same exact normal number, and the uncertain factor that we've calculated should remain the same. But before I copy and paste it, again I have to lock it. So I lock in volatility, lock in delta t, but I leave z open. It's not going to make a difference right now, but when I switch back the random numbers, that's when you'll see the impact. Okay, so do we all have the same numbers? I've removed the EXP. So if you have these two numbers, all you now need to do is add the certain and the uncertain piece, raise it to the power E, and you should have your model. So the next step that I'm going to do is I'm going to add these two pieces, and my total figure is this plus this, and I do EXP of both. So the number that you should see now is 0.85582, and this is, you multiply it with S0. So what's your price? So your price here is 79. Your price in the next simulation, 1 month down the road, is simply 79, which is S0, into e r minus half sigma square t plus sigma into under root t delta t. And now all you'll do is simply scroll it. You get to about, you do r a n d bracket open bracket close, plug it in, and there's your oil price series. Now the easiest thing that you can do now, which would be very useful for later on, hook this up to a line graph. So that's your oil price model. That's your oil price model over a 18-month period. It goes up, comes down, goes up, comes down, goes up, comes down. The same process that you used here, you will use if you are modeling a currency, an equity security, or a commodity. There are certain adjustments or refinements to the model that need to be made that we will not bother with, okay? That you will cover in advanced derivatives or in your derivatives part 2 course, or if it's not covered in derivatives part 2, we'll cover it in RM2. For now, we will assume that this model works. There is a small flaw in this model, which we will ignore, which we will come back to when we come back to the next edition of RM2. We now have a model that gives us a forecast of oil prices. My next question is, what's the relationship of between oil prices and passenger miles, between oil prices and profitability? So we've built one model, one small model. We now need to build two more models. And again, we can either use a random simulator or we can simply use a simple relationship that says if oil prices are in this range, passenger miles will be here. If oil prices are in that range, passenger will be here. So we'll have a simple linear or completely deterministic, not random, model that will allow us to do that. So let's go ahead and do that. So now, what we are going to do, so you use data tables to store the results, and then you take an average of the results and see what happens, right? So now, even now, if I do a min and max on this, the min and max will vary for all of us, right? So my min and max is 65,122, right? Yours is different. But if I were to go out and now, if I were to go out and build a simple data table for, let's say, 100 simulations, which we will do, now, what do I want from this simulation? I want a forecast for the price of oil at the end of 12 months. I also want a minimum price in the next 18 months, a forecast of minimum price in the next 18 months, and a forecast of maximum price in the next 18 months. So what I'll now do is I'll simply use the Excel data table functionality, and this is average of the 12-month price, average of the low, average of the high. So my number now is 79.9, which is my 12-month forecast, 56.7, which is my low, and 101 point something, which is my 18-month high. So now that we've built a simple model for simulating oil prices, and we have a forecast for 12 months, forecast for the low in the next 18 months, and a high for the next 18 months. Next step is to go out and figure out what would happen to our total revenues depending on what happens to oil prices. So what I'm going to do next is I now want a model that says where are our revenues or what happens to our revenues based on oil prices. But the number I want to look at is annual revenues. I want to look at quarter or 6 months. I want to look at annual revenues. Now, my annual revenue model is a simple model that says if the lowest that oil prices have hit in the last 12 months is 50, then my revenues will go up by 25%. Okay? If oil prices are between 50 and 75, they'll go up by about 15%. If they're between 90 and 75, they will not go anywhere. And if they are between 100 and 90, they'll actually decline by about 10%. And if they're over 101, then they'll decline by about 20%. Notice that I'm not simulating revenue growth. I'm not putting that as a process. I'm simply linking revenue growth to simulated oil prices, which will then turn it into a simulated number. But for the purpose of our exercise, our model is model that says if oil prices are under 50, then I get this, otherwise this, otherwise this, okay? But if this is the model, then I need, what do I need? For each simulation, I need 12-month oil price. Now, you can make it more sophisticated and say the average oil price of the last 12, or the next 12 months is under 50, then we get this number, right? Which means that we need to calculate an average also. So I need to go out and calculate an average here. Each element of the model needs to be in the same time zone. You've seen those movies where people travel in time? You need to be in the same time zone, which means that if your model is forecasting numbers every iteration, then all elements of the model need to be linked to that iteration. Okay? So in this case, we'll do average 12, which is an average of one simulation, but of the first 12 nodes. Now, what is my simulated growth? My simulated growth is then the average 12-month price is 82.16. My model says if it's under 50 or between 50 and 75, it'll be about 25%. If it's over 75, it's 15%. If it's over 90, it's 0. If it's over 100, it's minus 10. If it's over 105, it's minus 20. What the revenue model does, it says price of oil will determine revenue growth. And what we've done is we've said if prices are over 50, average oil prices are over 50, we grow by about 25%. If they're over 75, we grow by about 15%. If they're over 90, we grow by 0. If they're over 100, we grow by negative 10. If they're over 105, we grow by negative 20. Okay? Now, the problem was that there would be some instances where the average price may actually fall below 50. And if they would fall below 50, you would not get a value. So what we did was we said we're going to put in a clause, which is that max clause over there, that will ensure that the minimum value that you will see will be 50. And that then locks growth at 25%. Your business will not grow beyond 25%. We are missing one more element. We've factored in revenue growth, but we haven't factored in the impact of rising or decreasing oil prices on expenses. Should we or shouldn't we? We factored in the impact of rising oil prices and declining oil prices on revenue growth, right? But we haven't made a similar model for the impact on expenses. So think about this. How would you accommodate it? For now, what we will do is we'll take what we've done. So we've built an oil price simulator. We've linked that oil price simulator to revenue growth. We have a baseline revenue number. What we want to do next is take that baseline revenue number and see the impact on that revenue number on when both of these elements are put together. So we'll build a very simple model. We'll not build a full-fledged pro forma revenues. We'll only take two elements, which is top line and expenses. When we do this, so now what we've done is we've separated the expenses into two pieces. A piece which is linked to fuel cost, and we've assumed for the second that the only expense that's linked to fuel cost is just fuel cost, nothing else. And what we'll do for the purpose of our simulations, we'll hold everything else constant. But fuel cost or fuel expense we want to simulate, we want to link. What I'd recommend is a very simple model. That simple model is you already know what your current cost is, your current spot price is, which is about 79. Okay, you already have a number for the next 12 month increase. You have the average, right? The average fuel cost over the next 12 months. You've done that simulation as part of your model. Simply calculate the increase and change this number by that increase. So no complication, very simple model, a model that basically says, take this figure, see that number, take that figure, 60.14. Calculate the difference between 60.14 and your current number, which is, I think, 79. Whatever that number is, positive or negative, apply that to your fuel expense. Now, you may not want to apply it completely to your fuel expense because you may have long-term contracts in place, which means that your fuel expense is not going to move as quickly, but maybe you apply 50% addition or reduction. So that way, you'll have three moving pieces. You'll have the oil price, you'll have revenues, right? And you'll have fuel expense that are all linked to oil prices and will interact with each other as part of the simulation is concerned. This is not a rock solid model, but it at least allows us to see the interaction of the different factors. And you can refine it, I can refine it later on when we have time. What we've done is we have three pieces that are moving in the model. The first piece is revenue forecast. The second piece is oil prices. The third piece is expenses related to oil prices. Now, I have one more question or statement, and that question or statement is that while we've reduced prices, reduced expenses based on oil prices, we haven't adjusted expenses based on growth. If demand falls by 25%, this expense will also come down, right? Demand goes up by 25%, this expense will also go up. Similarly, your fixed expenses that you have on that side, if demand or expenses go up and down, they would also adjust by the same amount. So we need to make that one adjustment also before the model is complete, before we get a final number for a margin. All we've done is compare the average 12-month price with the starting price. So what I'm doing is I'm actually taking this exact number and I'm applying it to the fuel expense. The prices are at 80% of their original level. The fuel expense would also be 80% of the original level. So I can do two ways. I can say calculate the difference, which is 20%, take the expense, reduce the expense by 20%, and calculate the new expense. Or I can say expenses are 80% of the previous level and simply apply that factor. Okay, so now this is what I've done. Step number one, let's look at the old model. The old model says that the gross ticket proceeds are $12 billion. The total expense, including fuel expense, is $10.6 billion. The margin is $1.4 billion. And the fuel expense is about $2.745 billion. If I reduce the fuel expense based on the impact of change in oil prices, I get about a revised fuel expense of about $1.918 million. If everything remains constant. But everything is not going to remain constant because revenues are going to grow, non-fuel oil expenses will grow, fuel oil expenses also grow. So what I do is I take this 1.918 and I say this will now grow by 25%, which is the rate of growth that I've used here. Because fuel prices have come down, the overall cost will come down. Because volume has gone up, the number will also go up, right? So I do this for fuel oil. I do exactly the same thing for other non-fuel expenses. For other non-fuel expenses, what I'm doing is I'm saying, take this figure. This figure is 12,000 times 25%. So revenues have gone up by 25%. But what about expenses? Expenses have two pieces, fuel and non-fuel, right? So the fuel piece is here. Because oil prices have come down by 70%, fuel has come down from 2.7 to 1.9. But because the business has grown by 25%, fuel has also volume-wise gone from 1.9 to 3.98. Then here what I do is I say my old number is 10.6. From this total expense, what do I want to remove? I want to remove fuel expense, which is 2.745. So I'm left with something like 7.9. Then this 7.9 needs to grow. So this 7.9 is growing at 1.25%. And to this revised figure, this growing figure, I also need to add the new fuel cost. So my total number comes out to be 12.216. And then my margin number becomes 2.784. The next step is to take this simulated margin and plug it into your data table. Now, the volatility level that we've used in our calculation here earlier is 2.5. But we've seen that historical volatility has risen as high as 8%. So let's increase this to something like 8%. So what I've done is in the data table, I've put in margin. And then at the same time, I want to repeat the data table calculation. So data, what if analysis, table, column input cell, pick a blank cell, press OK. And then here, just take the average again. Okay, now, 8% volatility gives you an annualized volatility of 128%, which is too high. So we need to reduce this. Let's bring it down to 4%. It's more reasonable. Okay, so now I have this table where I'm saying my average margin based on the simulated model that I've created is about 1800 or $1.8 billion based on the model that we worked with and created. But what if I go back and change my growth assumptions? And now I say, you know, maximum we will grow is about 15% here, about 10% here. And if things get really, really bad, this number would be minus 15% and this number would be about minus 25%. So 15, 10, 0, minus 15 and minus 25. Now if I press F9, my number is down to about 1.6 from 1.8. Okay. So the third question I want to ask is, what is the probability that margins will turn negative, correct? How do I calculate that? You already have your results here. So all you need to do is do a COUNTIF. COUNTIF, there's your range, less than 0. How many directions do we have? We have 100, right? So this is 13 by 100. You're saying there's an 11% chance that you'll actually end up, probability of ending up with negative margins about 11%. If you're lost or overwhelmed or confused, that's perfectly all right. First time I did this was about 12 years ago, right? And you've taken it remarkably better than I did. Let's think about what have we accomplished. Yesterday we did an exercise. We had a board meeting. And that board meeting, we felt that we didn't have all the right pieces of information. And we had to make assumptions, not just about inputs, but also about the interaction of those inputs with each other. So we said, let's put together and build a model. And the model that we will build will allow us to simulate a few elements. Those simulations may be questionable. We need to fix and refine them and make them better. But at least it'll simulate something and show us how the world would operate. So we picked three pieces. We said oil prices, the impact of oil prices on revenues, the impact of oil prices on expenses. He said the objective of this entire model, very simplistic model, very basic model, is to simply look at margin and the probability that the margin will turn negative. In this analysis that we've done so far, we haven't factored in the cost of hedging or the impact of hedging. Right, that part has not been done. All we've done so far is build a basic model that says if you had a world in which nothing was hedged, this is how things would operate and this is what would come out. There are pieces that need to be fixed. There are pieces that we sort of just brushed apart because we are running out of time. But when we put this together, we said we now have a tool that allows us to simulate oil prices, evaluate the impact of oil prices based on a model on revenues, evaluate the impact also based on the model on expenses, calculate the impact on net margin, and then simulate net margin across 100 iterations to see what would be the expected number. The expected number under this scenario is not that different from the last 12 months, which is about 1.4 billion, right? But what is interesting is that by creating this tool, even with 100 iteration, we actually have some mechanism other than shortfall to look at and evaluate the probability of a negative margin scenario, which is about 11%. Yesterday we spoke about target accounts, things that your board wants to focus and manage and work with. A possible target account would be this probability. I want a hedging solution that brings the possibility of negative margins to under 10%. And I will only go for hedging if the probability of negative margin goes above 25%. If it doesn't go above 25%, I'm not interested in hedging solution.